You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
The Authorization for the Use of Military Force, or AUMF, was passed by the U.S. Congress in 2001. It granted the president the authority to use force against those who led the September 11th attacks. When the government tried to use this law as justification for the military commissions at Guantanamo, or to detain U.S. citizens without trial, they ran into trouble. Now the Obama administration is trying to achieve these ends with a new regulation. The regulation was introduced as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA. But this new statute is being challenged by a group of citizens in New York federal court. Journalist Marcy Wheeler has been following the case. She's author of the book Anatomy of Deceit and runs the website emptywheel.net. She spoke with Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen earlier this week, and Sean began by asking her about the NDAA.
In general, the National Defense Authorization Act is legislation that is passed every year. It's one of the only pieces of legislation that must be passed every year because it tells DOD what it can do. And since we're at war all the time, we've got to keep having NDAAs so that DOD knows what they can spend money on. But attached to it, there was a whole set of guidelines about detention. And Congress has been pushing for a long time to kind of force, well, arguably force, but we can get back to that, force the administration to hold people forever, to never release anybody. And that's what some of it was. But there was one provision in there that basically tried to restate the 2001 authorization to use military force, which was the one for Afghanistan. It broadened it, and it also said that the administration has the authority under the law of war to hold these people. And one of the ways it broadened it was by saying not only was it anybody who had ties to 9/11, but also anybody who was involved with a quote-unquote associated force.
So the specific statute, it was challenged by a group of plaintiffs. Can you tell us a little about that group and why did they challenge this law specifically?
Yeah, the most interesting plaintiffs are Chris Hedges, who's been a long-time international journalist. He used to work for the New York Times. But in his reporting, he has done a lot of reporting on terrorism, and he's actually met with terrorists, the Al-Qaeda terrorists. He's met with Latin American terrorists. So he's met with the kind of people who are clearly targeted by this law, and we can come back to this as well, but there have been other journalists who have been targeted for reporting on Al-Qaeda, though they're not American citizens. So one is Chris Hedges, and the other one is Brigitte Jansdotter, who is, she has ties to WikiLeaks. She's a Icelandic parliament member, but she's also one of the people that the government, administratively subpoenaed the Twitter account of, and presumably a bunch of other communications things. So we know the government is investigating her in relation to WikiLeaks, and we know with some of the claims they've made in Bradley Manning's case have suggested that they have actually accused Bradley Manning of knowingly helping Al-Qaeda by allegedly leaking the WikiLeaks cable. So it's really easy to see how they could get to claiming some kind of Al-Qaeda tie from Brigitte Jansdotter, because they've already made it with Bradley Manning. And then there are some other people with ties to WikiLeaks, Occupy Wall Street. So all people who are kind of the domestic resistance, if you will, with the exception of Jansdotter, who, of course, is Icelandic. But a couple of them really do parallel the kind of people who have been pursued under counterterrorism strategies in the past.
Now, earlier this year, a lower court, a federal judge, struck down the statute. What happened there? Why did the court agree with the plaintiffs?
Yeah, and it's an Obama appointee named Catherine Forrest in New York City. And one of the most interesting things on this, I mean, the administration on counterterrorism issues has long been really arrogant. And in the first hearing on this case, the judge repeatedly asked the government lawyers, can Chris Hedges be detained in the NDAA? Can Brigida Young's daughter be detained in the NDAA? And she asked that for all of the people who either testified or in person or had their statements read in person. And for each one, the government said, no, we can't tell you that. And she said, can you tell me what this means? Can you tell me what associated means? No, we can't tell you that. No, we can't give you an example. And so she, one of the arguments that the plaintiffs were making was that it was so vague, the NDAA language, that their actions, say Chris Hedges' reporting, for example, was being chilled because they didn't know whether reporting on Al-Qaeda was going to be prosecuted or not. And rather than coming in and very clearly saying to the judge, no, that's not included, they kind of refused to give any kind of plain answers to the judge. And so she was like, you know, now you, I mean, there are two things. One is whether they have standing. And since the government refused to say that they wouldn't be prosecuted, she said, well, yeah, they have standing because you won't tell them that they don't. And then the second step is whether or not she could legally stop them from using the NDAA. And that's a kind of bigger hurdle, but she argued, and the case law is beginning to come around to this, she argued that they do have real reason to worry, and therefore, and they've argued, that they've stopped doing things. Like Chris Hedges won't necessarily go report in the Middle East because she's afraid that it's going to get him detained as an Al-Qaeda sympathizer.
Now, the Obama administration has filed an emergency appeal, and what has happened with that appeal?
There were two stages where first the judge issued a temporary injunction and then she made it permanent, and that's when the Obama administration filed an appeal. And actually the Second Circuit, so the circuit covering New York City, put a hold on her order until they can hear the appeal. And the appeal is it in the next couple of days or is it in October? I forget. But in any case, and one of the other really interesting questions about this is the government has always argued, the administration has always argued, that that they don't need the NDAA because they've got the AUMF. So in other words, they don't need this new legislation because, as they understand it, it's no different from the authorization to use military force, and therefore they could rely on the military, the AUMF. And that's what they've been saying for months and months and months. And then all of a sudden she issued the permanent injunction. She also used language basically saying that if anybody wanted to bring a contempt case to her, so in other words, if anybody wanted to go to her and said, the government is violating your order, you need to hold the government in contempt, she would be willing to listen to it. And I think that's one of the things that made the government panic, though by no means the only thing. And the status of the NDAA, of this particular part of the NDAA right now, is that it's on hold until the appeals court can hear the appeal.
This statute, as it stands, it's really not clear whether it includes citizens within the United States or not.
Right, and that's the problem. And again, one of the reasons it's not clear is because the case law on the AUMF has never been decided. So if you go back to when Jose Padilla was picked up in 2002, he filed a habeas corpus petition, which is all the NDAA leaves to people who are detained under its authority. So Jose Padilla files a habeas petition in one circuit. It kind of gets knocked back for technical reasons. He tries it in another circuit. It's granted. So you've got two circuits saying different things about whether American citizens can be held under the AUMF. And the Obama administration has, both the Obama and the Bush administrations, kind of pulled people out of detention, out of military detention, so that ambiguity would remain on the books. So in other words, they want us to not know whether somebody like Jose Padilla could be held. And once you argue that Jose Padilla could be held, then any American citizen could be held.
Turning for a second to non-citizens, one of the few positive things that I have seen come out of this particular legislation, the NDAA, is the prospect that all current detainees will have their cases reviewed. How do things stand with that particular aspect of the act?
Really important. It's a really important question. That review was supposed to hold for both Gitmo detainees and detainees held in defense custody anywhere else in the world. So one of the things that was negotiated in conference was that that the administration, the government, would have a bit of breathing space in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan is actually the big issue. Obama has quintupled the size, the prison population in Afghanistan. So the numbers we're talking about are far greater. The courts thus far have resisted saying that that detainees in Bagram are entitled to the same kind of habeas corpus review as detainees in Gitmo. And you know, Obama got this kind of breathing room from Congress, and then he pushed it even further. So he basically made it so those detainees aren't getting the congressionally mandated review that was supposed to be the good part of the NDAA. And we've since handed over the Bagram prison to the Afghans, but we're withholding a number of detainees precisely because we want them to be indefinitely detained in Afghanistan. And this is kind of the bitter irony of it. Afghanistan is saying, no, that's not constitutional under our law. We either have to try them or let them go. And we're saying, no, we want you to indefinitely detain them. And so if you won't, then we're going to hold them in U.S. custody in Bagram. And so there are, you know, Gitmo is bad enough. And the administration is playing with the kinds of reviews. A year ago, they said that there were going to be meaningful reviews, you know, regularly. And as it rolled out those meaningful reviews, it kind of made them a lot less meaningful. It basically said the government gets to decide if there's anything new that would make it meaningful. They tried to restrict access for lawyers of existing detainees. You know, so the government is trying to avoid meaningful reviews in both Gitmo and Afghanistan. But it's far worse in Afghanistan because they don't have any real meaningful review there now at all. And we're refusing to turn people over to the Afghans because we don't want to give them any kind of meaningful review.
Marcy, any guesses as to where this particular statute's going to go after the in the appeals and after that?
I think, unfortunately, it's very, very, very few judges in this country have the courage to stand up to the government. And the government repeatedly says, you don't have the authority to review these issues. Now, it goes through a different circuit than all of the Gitmo cases have gone through, and that's better. There's a better chance that in New York you're going to get a meaningful review than in D.C. There's another case called Clapper v. Amnesty, which is about the wiretapping program, and that's at the Supreme Court this fall, and that's going to decide whether we as American citizens can get standing in cases like the wiretapping case, but also in this case, when the government won't tell us whether we're covered by something or not. So that's going to affect it. And it's always, unfortunately, it's always best to be pessimistic about the state of the courts and the state of the administrative arguments because they keep winning these, and the only thing the courts seem to really care about is preserving their own prerogative. So ultimately, I mean, the question is, what is Anthony Kennedy, the swing judge at the Supreme Court, what's going to get him interested in this case? And the only thing history shows, the only thing that will really get him interested in a case like this is if he feels like the administration is stomping on the feet of judges. He might. He might not. We still don't know how Elena Kagan is going to rule on these issues, but I do think this is going to go straight to the Supreme Court.
And that was Marcy Wheeler in conversation with Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen. Marcy Wheeler is author of the book Anatomy of Deceit. To read more of Marcy's coverage of the NDAA case, you can go to mtwheel.net.